Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Charlie Cook of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim Garrity is off for the rest of this week. And, Charlie, good news, bad news, crazy news, as always. The good news is kind of related to the bad news. Jim and I had speculated earlier this week that on the first day of sequester cuts hitting FAA, and I use the cuts in quotation marks since they're actually reductions in spending increases, it didn't look that bad. But now some airports around the country are really getting hit hard. Stunningly, Washington is not one of them, since that's the airport that lawmakers and government officials actually have to use. But Republicans are not taking this line down. They are certainly not taking the blame for this. Pat Toomey doing a great job both on the Senate floor and on the cable chat shows. Here's a couple of clips from Pat Toomey speaking with the gang at Morning Joe on MSNBC.
A little known fact that's pretty compelling about why the administration is clearly manufacturing a crisis for political gain. Take a look at the FAA budget. If the sequester goes through and stays in place, the FAA will have more money to spend in 2013 than what the president asked for in his budget submission. This is why they're doing this, precisely because the president, frankly, and many in his administration were so shrill about this leading up to the sequester. Now they feel like, well, they'd better make it painful or else they look pretty foolish having predicted all the dire consequences. They backed themselves into a bad position where what they should have done is said, okay, let's work with Congress. Let's find the duplication, the waste, the excess. Let's cut the low priority items. They can easily make do with the money that's left over.
So, Charlie, the case being made by Republicans here is very compelling. The facts are on their side, but, of course, the president has greater exposure, and we have to wait and see as this plays out which side gets the real blame from the American people here.
George Will had an excellent column, I think, a couple of months ago, in which he pointed out that whatever it is that is currently spent in the United States, that is the amount that is needed to forestall incredible suffering, whatever that number is. And there's a real philosophical problem here for the left, because the sequester is not a bad start in cutting the vastness of American government. But it's really not a huge problem. They do not want people realizing that they can cut their government and everyone won't suddenly die. So they're having to make it look as if this is doing terrible things. The great example 6 weeks ago was the president with the White House tours. He decided to shut those, which was very quickly blew up in his face. It's an effective idea, but the problem is the American people aren't that stupid, and that they know slowing the rate of increase does not lead to constant delays. And I think that Toomey's point in the second clip was the best one, which is that the FAA actually is more flush with cash than it ever has been.
Right.
And it's more flush with cash than the president wanted it to be, even if he got his entire way on the budgeting process.
Yeah, the House chairman of the Transportation Committee is a guy named Bill Schuster of Pennsylvania. He says the vast majority of FAA employees are not air traffic controllers, yet somehow it's air traffic controllers are the ones that are mysteriously being furloughed here. And obviously, Republicans are, I think, are on to the president's game here. Speaking of sequestration, we move now to our second martini, and as usual, it's the bad one, and it involves Harry Reid, so you know, really know it's not a good one. Harry Reid and the Democrats were trying to move forward a bill to suspend the sequester for the current fiscal year because, as you know, reducing the rate of increase is draconian. So Tom Coburn of Oklahoma objected to that, saying it's just another example of, you know, the government not even trying to make the cuts in a responsible way and just inflicting pain on the American people. We can't absorb these cuts. It's not the end of the world. So Harry Reid then goes to the Senate floor and tries to take on Tom Coburn in a couple of bizarre ways. First of all, he says Tom Coburn is encouraging the Tea Party, which is running the country. Listen to this.
We have a situation where this country has been driven by the Tea Party for the last number of years. When I was in school, I studied government, and I learned about the anarchists. Now, they were different than the Tea Party because they were violent. But they were anarchists because they did not believe in government at any level, and they acknowledged it. The Tea Party kind of hides that.
And if that weren't far enough, Harry Reid went exactly opposite of Ronald Reagan in declaring his love for government.
Anything they can do to throw a monkey wrench in the wheels of government. They're happy doing that. And I'm sorry to say my friend from Oklahoma is helping them. Maybe not directly, but indirectly. And that's wrong. Government is not inherently bad. Government is inherently good. That's why we have a constitution. And that's what we direct the activities of this government based upon.
Government is inherently good, Charlie. I don't even know where to start there, but I'm pretty sure his version of government and the founders' version are completely different things.
Well, the Constitution's primary purpose is to restrict government. It's to define what government may do narrowly and to put certain prohibitions on government action. The complaint that the right make about the president, and Harry Reid did it there as well, is that he very rarely portrays his opponents accurately. He always presents a cartoon version of what they believe, or he lies about it. The anarchist thing is something that's become increasingly popular within the Democratic Party. I'm frequently called an anarchist for example, defending the First and Second Amendments. It's ridiculous for two reasons, because it mischaracterizes both parties. It pretends that the conservative idea is that there should be no government whatsoever. So when something like the Boston bombing happens, you hear people on the fringes saying, well, look at the first responders, they're government employees. As if those of us who don't want to run trillion-dollar deficits would like to go into the local government areas and fire all of the teachers and the cops. And it presumes that the opposite of that, or the alternative choice, is that the Democratic Party, which is in favor of limited government, which is also hilarious, rather than that there is a massive, massive American federal government, absolutely vast, and that one party is in favor of expanding it, and the other party is in favor of mildly cutting it back. So I think it possibly indicates the weakness of their position in that they cannot portray Republican proposals honestly.
One of the issues that certainly highlights the thirst for bigger government was the Obamacare debate, passed entirely by Democrats in the spring of 2010. We just passed the three-year anniversary of that monstrosity. And now Politico is reporting, thanks to John Bresnahan and Jake Sherman, that, quote, congressional leaders in both parties are engaged in high-level confidential talks about exempting lawmakers and Capitol Hill aides from the insurance exchanges they are mandated to join as part of President Barack Obama's health care overhaul, sources in both parties said. The talks, which involve Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, House Speaker John Boehner, the Obama administration, and other top lawmakers, are extraordinarily sensitive, with both sides acutely aware of the potential for political fallout from giving carve-outs from the hugely controversial law to 535 lawmakers and thousands of their aides. Discussions have stretched out for months. A source close to the talk says, quote, everyone has to hold hands on this and jump or nothing is going to get done. Yet if Capitol Hill leaders move forward with the plan, they risk being dubbed hypocrites by their political rivals and the American public. By removing themselves from a key Obamacare component, lawmakers and aides would be held to a different standard than the people who put them in office. The article goes on to say that Democrats might take the most heat for this since they're the ones who actually pass it. But if Republicans give them cover by going along with it, well, then both parties are going to get slapped around for it. And Charlie, I think rightfully so.
If Republicans give Democrats cover on this, they need shooting. When I read this story last night, I could not believe it. The sheer gore, I think there's only one word for it, it's corruption. You know, what is good for thee is not good for me. I think it's very possible, if they do this, that it will backfire more on the Democrats than the Republicans. And I can see this becoming a big issue in 2014. The Politico article is particularly interesting in that it seems to make the case that there's something special about the case of lawmakers and their aides, that they're worried about a brain drain, they're worried about the deleterious consequences of Obamacare on the area, as if that's only true in this case. You know, so all of the reports that we've heard from various industries, even unions now are starting to line up and say this is causing us problems. Well, don't worry about all of those. But when it comes to Congress, there's a specific thing that we need to fix. It's quite astonishing.
What do you think is going to happen here? Do you think ultimately this is just going to blow up and they won't do it? Or do you think they're actually going to try and pull this off?
It wouldn't surprise me if they tried to pull it off. Republicans will be very stupid once again if they allow them to pull it off, because they should be hammering them home. The political commercials would write themselves, would they not?
Absolutely.
For 2014. Democrats foisted this on the whole country on a party line vote using all sorts of parliamentary tricks and buy-offs. It's still unpopular, and yet now they want to exempt themselves from it. Could there be any better way of illustrating the power grab that this was than to say that? If John Boehner acquiesces on this, he'll be in trouble.
You know, yesterday we got to talk about Elvis impersonators being exonerated. That was more fun, I think, than watching the Republicans potentially provide cover for the Democrats on the biggest monstrosity of this administration. So we'll keep watching, and we'll talk again tomorrow. Charlie, thanks as always for being with us.
Great. Talk to you tomorrow.
Charlie Cook of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us. And as I just mentioned, Charlie will be back again on Friday to join me for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.